You're listening to Think Out Loud on OPB. I'm Dave Miller. New research out of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows that out-of-hospital births have risen steadily over the last decade, and Oregon has one of the highest rates in the country. Yet, even as a leader in the home birth and birthing center movements, the numbers are still pretty low. Only about 4% of babies are born outside a hospital in Oregon. The national average is a little over 1%. This month, the public radio show The World has been exploring pregnancy and childbirth issues in their series The Ninth Month. We are joining that conversation today with a look at out-of-hospital births and home births in particular. We want to know if you gave birth at home or at a birthing center and how you made that decision. Our number is 1-888-665-5865. Our website is opb.org/thinkoutloud. I'm joined now by Eugene DeClercq. He is a professor in community health sciences at Boston University and a founder of Birth by the Numbers, which collects data about childbirth in the U.S. and around the world. Eugene DeClercq, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So your latest research that I mentioned briefly, it studied the rate of out-of-hospital births around the country. What counts as an out-of-hospital birth?
That's actually a more complicated question, but then I'm an academic and we make everything a little more complicated.
Then we'll try to simplify it.
Right. So there's several different categories. The two primary ones are home births and freestanding birth center births that are considered out of hospital. The only thing that's really tricky about this is in the case of some of the births that might be planned at home, they may end up in hospitals. And so in terms of analysis, there's an issue of what counts as a home birth. Is it a planned home birth, regardless of where it ends up, or is it the births that actually end up at home? About 1 in 8 of the home births are unplanned home births, and these may be very rapid labors or, for whatever reason, they occur at home. About 88% of all home births are planned.
And of those, the ones that are planned, do you have numbers for how many end up in a hospital?
We don't. In the United States, we don't. There are some smaller studies, so we don't have national data on that. Smaller studies suggest a transfer rate of anywhere from 10 to 15 to 18%. In countries that have more developed systems, more integrated systems, where transfers occur in a very smooth fashion, those are the rates of transfer that typically occur. And again, that can be made up of it's not all transfers in the middle of labor. That includes transfers that may occur during the pregnancy when a decision is made that for whatever risk factors, this birth should end up in hospital.
So among the different places, though, so largely, you know, freestanding birthing centers and home births here that we're talking about, the big categories of out-of-hospital births, what stood out to you in the most recent numbers that you crunched?
There's a couple things. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm incredibly old, and the data has been going down for years. And home birth advocates would write to me and say, we know the home birth rate's going up. And I would write back to them and say, no, for the period since we started actually collecting data on home birth, which goes back to 1989, the rate has gone down consistently from 1989 through 2004. Since 2004, it started to go up dramatically. Dramatically on small numbers. We're still talking less than 1% of all births, but a substantial increase, and particularly interesting in light of the consistent decrease over those years.
So let's talk, so now we're talking about two big periods then. I'm curious what you think happened in each one. First, from 89 to 2004, why was the rate going down?
There's not a lot of demand for home births. Generally, there's pressure on people not to have their babies at home. They may not be able to find a provider who will do a home birth. It's very difficult to get a physician to do a home birth. And the people who primarily do home births are certified professional midwives, and their availability to mothers may vary considerably on a state-to-state basis. And so it may be a function of all of those things. Is there a plan? Is there a possibility? And then there's a question of awareness, and I think some of that is what changes in 2004, in that period. When it starts to go up, it goes up for a few different reasons in all likelihood. There was a bit of a cultural shift. There may have been a bit of a reaction. It's at that time that the cesarean rate starts to peak in the United States at about 33% after some really substantial increases in the decade or so before that. And it may be a bit of a reaction to that that's occurring at this point. There's also But that's very much a grassroots movement. That's happening without any real external factors going on. Aside from the fact that in the mid-2000s, there's a bit of a surge in childbirth activism. Women are raising questions. And again, this may be a reaction to the cesarean rates. But women are asking questions about the way birth is conducted in the hospital. And a small proportion of them start to say that they would rather have birth outside the hospital.
Eugenia Clerk, we want to hear much more about your research, but let's get some personal stories in here. Kathy Newman is on the line from Portland, had her first daughter in a hospital, second at home. Kathy Newman, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
What was your plan for your first daughter?
Well, I had originally planned on having her at home, and she wasn't cooperating. So we had to go to the hospital.
What do you mean when you say she wasn't cooperating?
Well, she was turned around, and I had been laboring for 35 hours. And so the lay midwife took us to the hospital, and that's where I had her.
What was that experience like, the delivery in the hospital after 35 hours of labor at home? But clearly this wasn't your plan. What was the experience like?
It wasn't horrible, but it certainly wasn't what we had planned. They have their protocol, and, they wanted to take her away from us immediately when she was born and give her a bath. And, you know, it just wasn't that close, intimate experience that we had thought we would have. So they allowed us to have all the people that we had at our birth in the room with us. But it just wasn't that intimate experience. So,
what happened? I mentioned that your second daughter you had at home.
Well, yeah.
What was that experience like?
Well, and that's what I have to compare to. It was wonderful. It was an easy birth, and that aside, of course, just being at home, being able to fall asleep with my child right after the birth, have family and friends, just have the smells and the experience of your own home. It was fantastic. It was the best, and I'm so glad I was able to have that experience.
How was the decision made after those 35 hours to actually go to the hospital? Who made that decision?
Our midwife.
And what were you hoping for at that point, or what were you thinking?
All I wanted was to not have a C-section. So, that was my thought going through my head. Of course, after 35 hours of labor, I wasn't really quite thinking straight, but I had that fear. And luckily, my lay midwife and my husband were able to advocate, and they really didn't, to my knowledge, ever really talk about that. But I had to go in and have an epidural, and that was really harsh, to have been feeling all this pain and then be given an epidural and be numb. So they had their protocols to set me up with the monitor and all of that. So, it was a good decision. I'm glad we went, because the midwife really had many years of experience and just felt like, the progression wasn't happening the right way. So,
well, Kathy, thanks very much for joining us.
Sure. Happy to share my story.
That's Kathy Newman, who called us from Portland. Shannon has called in from Bend. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Hi.
So what's your experience?
I had planned on having a home birth, and I ended up going to the hospital 3 weeks before I was due, and I had a version of preeclampsia where they decided I needed an immediate C-section. So it was a very scary experience and not at all what I had planned.
And what was the experience like? This was not at all, as you say, what you planned. What was it like for you?
Well, the good news is that I survived and my baby survived, and we are both thriving now.
You said thriving, not driving, right?
Thriving.
Good.
And so absolutely going to the hospital saved my life and my baby's life. It was a very bad situation. What I wanted to comment on is that here in Bend, there's a really terrible political situation between regular doctors and alternative midwives and alternative care, where I really wanted to have the support of both a midwife and a doctor, but because of legal considerations, no doctor would see me since I was under the care of a midwife.
So, do you think that affected the care you ended up getting, what you see as the political fight between different parts of the childbirth profession?
It absolutely affected it, because instead of having both the modern medicine and the alternative care that I desired all throughout my pregnancy, I ended up only going with the alternative care, which at the end of the day meant that I didn't have certain tests. So the condition that I had was not caught ahead of time, and it ended up being an emergency.
Shannon, thanks very much for that call. Eugene DeClercq, is that something you've seen nationally, a tension still between, as I mentioned, you know, different parts of the childbirth profession?
Yeah, it's absolutely the case, both nationally and historically. And so home birth is a real threat to the sort of medical community, because it's seen as undermining everything that they do in all of their training. And what makes the tension so pronounced is that this is sort of at an ideological level. It's that people believe so strongly in hospital birth or home birth that bridging that gap to try to find solutions becomes that much more difficult. It's not a matter of cynicism or honestly, doctors aren't worried about losing business to home births. The numbers are way too small for that. What upsets them is the fact that they believe that's unsafe. And so because of that, they take stronger steps against it. The goal, I think, for most home birth advocates is to try to set up integrated systems where the process of transfer is a smooth one, can work both ways, that if a mother has a condition in the prenatal period and needs to use hospital services, she can use it and maybe ultimately ends up with a home birth. Or if she's in labor and needs to go to the hospital, she can do so without she and her midwife and her family being denounced for some reason. Ideally, you'd like to have a system where it can work together. And it does, and there are systems like that in several countries that work pretty smoothly.
Couple comments from our website. One commenter wrote, my first birth was out of hospital, my second in the hospital. The lack of training and accountability of out-of-hospital providers in Oregon is mind-boggling. The poor care with my first child led me to seek better care in the hospital. That's one point of view. We got this from Marie Annan, who said, I had an out-of-hospital birth because I didn't want interventions due to a doctor with no experience in natural childbirth, staff wanting to hurry me up, and I certainly didn't want to be made to lie on my back with my legs behind, held up while pushing against gravity during delivery. I trusted my body, my baby, my support system, and my midwives. That's Marie Annan on our website, opb.org/thinkoutloud. We're joined by Naomi Alstead in Portland. Naomi, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What is your experience here? I understand that you have two children now. What happened with your first child?
Well, listening to this show, I think that there is this tension between the natural home birth side and the medical side. And I think there are times when on the home birth side, the midwives may want so badly and be so fully committed to that ideology that they may push things farther than they should. And so I feel like in my situation, my baby was born at home, and that part of the process was what I wanted it to be. I enjoyed being at home and the comforts of home, but I had complications with the placenta. So the placenta had grown into the uterus, and it wasn't coming out. And the midwives continued to tell me, don't worry, it's going to be okay, we're going to try this, we're going to try that. And I began to hemorrhage, and eventually I lost a lot of blood, and I passed out. And we had to have the emergency folks show up, and then there were complications because I was upstairs in my house, and my staircase was narrow and curved, and they couldn't figure out how to get me out, and I ended up having to go kind of out the back door and down a little used staircase in the middle of the night. And then at the hospital, I had a blood transfusion, and I had 4 pints of blood that was replaced, and then I kind of got some of the other side of things because my baby was not a patient there because he hadn't been born there at the hospital, and they didn't feel that I was able to have him in my room. So, I mean, strangely enough, my baby ended up spending his first night in a hotel room with my mother while I was in the hospital for 3 days. So I feel like, and the doctor that saw me at the hospital was very clear that the midwives should have brought me in earlier, and it certainly seems that way to me. I should have been brought in earlier, but you know, as the I think Kathy was saying, after 36 hours of labor, sometimes you can't really think that straight. And I think that you know, we relied solely on our midwives to make that kind of medical decision for us and make the call, because I'm not a medical professional and I certainly am not rational after 36 hours of labor.
Had you talked with your midwife in advance, you and your husband, about what it would take for you to transfer to go to a hospital?
Well, I think that we had had some preliminary conversations about that, but I don't think that we could have foreseen. I mean, I was always, of course, thinking, well, if it takes a really long time and we're talking about a C-section, which I didn't want, but if it was going to have to go that way, I certainly had never expected that my placenta was going to grow into my uterus. And so I thought I was done and out of the woods. And then all of a sudden things went south. And so I don't think we'd ever really talked about those kinds of possibilities.
What advice would you give to women who are considering childbirth, either at home or in a hospital? Because I understand that for your second child, after that experience, you went to a hospital. What advice would you give to expecting parents right now?
Well, I think that, you know, even I think you really need to be plan to be an advocate for yourself and have things written out as far as at what point do you want to say, let's call it and go to the hospital. Really be aware of how close are you to the hospital. If I hadn't been as close to the hospital as I was, things could have been a lot worse. I remember being in the ambulance and looking at the EMT who was working with me and seeing the beads of sweat on his balding head, and that's when I thought, I am in big trouble. But and I think that, you know, some logistical things. If you're upstairs, you can assume that you're not going to be able to walk downstairs. So if you have to be transported, how are you going to get out? And then if things go awry, there could be trauma in your very room that you're wanting to have peace and comfort in. So later on when I came back, we had blood stains all over. I mean, it was kind of like a crime scene, and it wasn't very restful when I came back and wanted to just relax and heal with my baby. So these are just kind of logistical things that I would suggest for a home birth that people really think about and figure out ahead of time. I certainly wished I had done a little more of that myself. And then as far as a hospital birth, you know, I think that my hospital birth, I have no fear anymore that, you know, you're going to be laid flat on your back and strapped up and you're not going to be allowed to, you know, I moved, I could get into the water tub, I was able to try different positions. And I think that you have to have those conversations with your provider ahead of time and say, absolutely, I want these options. And if you can't provide me those options, then I'm going to find a different hospital, because there are many hospitals that will provide that.
Naomi, thanks very much. That's Naomi in Portland. Let's take a call from Carrie in Portland. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, what's your experience?
Well, I would love to tell you the story of my second birth, which was here at Peninsula Park Commons.
Okay,
and
let's hear it.
And my third also, but I'll stick to my daughter.
Okay.
And she was over a week late. My first child, Cody, was born exactly on his due date, and so we really weren't expecting Ada to be so late, but she was, and we were really actually lucky because my midwives were, of course, prepared, and I was able to get my house even more prepared, and my mother had bought her ticket and had planned to come out a few days after to see her baby, but she got to be there and be an active participant and hold my hand and help my husband, and she was even able to cut the cord, and it was wonderful to share this home birthing experience in Oregon when she lives back in Indiana.
Carrie,
show her that it wasn't so crazy and that my midwives were beautiful women taking care of me, and this was natural and I could relax and really let my body follow what my mind wanted and needed to do.
Carrie, thanks very much for that call. Catherine has called in from Portland. Catherine, welcome to Think Out Loud.
Hi there.
Hey, go ahead.
I'm a midwife here in Portland, and I've been listening to all these stories and have a lot of compassion for women who have had births of all natures. I just wanted to speak to the development of what sounds like a really severe form of preeclampsia called HELLP syndrome that the woman calling from Bend developed. So the reason we do frequent prenatal visits at the end of pregnancy is that problems like this can develop, and having a woman dip her urine at each visit, taking her blood pressure, drawing any labs that might be necessary based on indications of protein or an elevation, a protein in urine or an elevation of blood pressure, is something that we routinely do as a part of our practice. And in fact, catch cases of preeclampsia you know, several times a year where we recommend induction in the hospital and then are able to follow our clients through those inductions and provide them with a normal case of postpartum care.
If I understand correctly what you're saying, I mean, between the lines is you think that's what our previous caller from Ben's midwife should have done. She should have done those tests and she should have caught that.
Well, the problem with HELLP syndrome is that it can present rapidly with no previous signs or symptoms. So I cannot fault any midwife for doing what I don't know that she, you know, she may well have been on the lookout for this, and it could have presented so rapidly that not even a doctor would have been able to prevent its rapid onset.
Catherine, thanks very much for calling in. I want to keep time for more calls, but I appreciate that call. Celeste Martin is on the line from Portland. Celeste, welcome to the show.
Hello.
I understand that you decided to have a birth at home. How did you make that decision?
We did a lot of thinking and researching. We were both researchers. And so we kind of looked at our comfort level, whether in the hospital or at home, and we decided we would be more comfortable in a space that we knew. And we also just looked at kind of the things other people have mentioned, the increased intervention rates at hospitals, and kind of the idea that hospitals are there to treat sick people. And so sometimes when you're going to a hospital for something that's kind of a birth and hopefully a healthy experience, you might be coming into a different experience when you go. And so after doing all that research, and then we interviewed midwives really carefully to make sure that we had folks who were very well trained and who had kind of a conservative view. So they were people who were much more willing to transport to the hospital than some other midwives. And so we felt like if something did happen, we'd be able to go and get the care we needed.
So you did have a plan. That was part of your vetting of the midwives was how ready they were to transfer?
Yep. The women that we went with had actually a fairly high transport rate. And it wasn't because more of their patients had problems. It was because they were willing to transport kind of earlier in the process. And so that can work two ways. One way might be that you are transported when you wish you could stay at home. And then if you look at it the other way, you're transported to be safe and to be healthy and for your baby to be safe and healthy.
Did money factor into this decision for you at all?
I guess health insurance factored into it. We're lucky enough to have health insurance through my husband's work, and it covers birth in the hospital, but they absolutely refused to cover a home birth. But when we looked at the price of home birth versus the copays, and I think we had to pay 20% of this and that, it kind of worked out to be pretty much comparable. And so we just decided that we would prefer to be comfortable and in our home and welcome our son gently there.
Celeste, thanks very much.
Thanks so much.
That's Celeste Martin. She is a new mother who chose home birth. Eugene DeClercq is still with us. He's a professor in community health sciences at Boston University. Eugene, last week a group of OBGYNs published a paper based on CDC data. They argued that birth delivered by midwives at home, there was a 4 times more likely to die, babies there, than those delivered by hospital-based midwives. What's your response to their report?
Essentially, the difficulty is we can't resolve this question with research. The best research you could do would be a randomized trial, and we're not going to start doing that with people around home births. And short of that, you'd like to have data systems that allowed you to track, for instance, the babies that were transferred, which this data system doesn't. There's also a new item on the birth certificate around planned home births, and these authors chose not to use that in their analysis. It's a very crude analysis. If anyone was to download it and take a look at it, it's not very well done at this point.
But on that note of not including transfers, their argument was that as a result of that, the numbers of deaths related to home births could be higher. They're saying that if someone's transferred to a hospital, the CDC counts that as a hospital event. Their argument was that actually means the home birth death rates could be higher.
And the other side of that is they weren't able to, or at least chose not to, look at the planned home births separately. The difficulty here is that this is part of that general tension we're talking about. I work with exactly the same data, and I've looked at those things, and my colleagues at CDC and I have chosen not to publish that because it's just the data, it's pushing the data beyond what it can actually tell us.
You're saying that based on all the data we have right now, with thousands of births in hospitals and birthing centers and some at homes as well, it's impossible to know if one is safer than the other.
Yeah, it is.
That's a shocking fact.
It's a trade-off. you know, there are different risks in different places. The places that do the kind of integrative care that I talked about and have data that lets you do a better job of looking at this have done so. And what they find is essentially no difference. Some trade-offs, better for, you know, mothers who've had kids before, a little bit worse for mothers who haven't had kids before. And that's a more complete analysis. The difficulty in the United States is, A, we don't have data systems that let us look at it with that kind of thoroughness, and B, we don't have an integrated system. I mean, one can look at the data. Let's take worst case that these authors are completely correct. You could have two interpretations. One would be, well, since there's clearly growing demand for this, we could set up, let's work on setting up systems that allow us to integrate care more appropriately. Or you could say, this is really dangerous, no one should do it. And these authors chose the latter approach. I would argue for the former.
One of the lines that stood out to me from one of the authors, an obstetrician, this is quoted in the New York Times, this doctor said, "We need to make hospitals more like homes instead of making homes more like hospitals." What's your take on that basic idea of a change in an approach to pregnancy?
You can put up curtains and you can put up pictures in the room, but what you have to change is the philosophy in the hospital about the normalcy of birth. And that's a much more difficult process. That's where birth centers come in. They're a nice middle ground between the two. They're typically run by midwives, but in conjunction with the hospital. They're called freestanding, but they by law in most states, have to have a relationship with hospital around transfer. And for people who are uncomfortable with hospitals and uncomfortable with home, birth centers would be a nice option. The challenge is whether or not state laws will allow that because, again, that becomes a battle, and that does become an economic battle for some hospitals.
Eugene DeClercq, thanks very much for joining us. We have to leave it there, but I really appreciate your time.
Okay.
That's Eugene DeClercq. He is a professor in community health sciences at Boston University. A number of our guests for today's show came from our Public Insight Network. It's our growing database of people who share their experience with us so we can better cover Oregon and the world. You can find more information about the Public Insight Network at opb.org/public-insight. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to Allison Roper. She's danced for about 30 of her 40 years on Earth. Now she's retiring as a principal dancer of the Oregon Ballet Theater. We're also going to hear about the new Oregon Hops and Brewing Archive at Oregon State University. It's being called the first of its kind in the country. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Dave Miller. Enjoy your Wednesday.